Welcome back to the Great Dive Podcast, everybody. You're here with Martini Law Jamesy.
And Sheriff Brando here to enforce the law. An old Martini Law birthday boy, Jamesy.
Hey, it is my birthday today that we're recording this, Brando.
63 years young. I'm kidding. I wished I looked as good as you do when I was 49.
Hey, thank you.
What's your secret?
Hard
living.
Manscaped.
Oh, man.
Manscaping is my secret.
I tossed up a softball for that segue. I was going to say hard living and,
and
a beautiful woman and beautiful women.
That's right, everybody. It's old Jamesy's birthday. And this year for my birthday.
You're getting your rock shaved. What?
Yes, I'm here to make sure, you know, that my carpets match my drapes this year for my little birthday fun.
Wait.
With the leaders in the below-the-waist grooming, Brando.
You know what that means? That means you don't have any drapes and no carpets? What's going on? Hardwood floors?
No, it's springtime. It's time to clear out that winter bush with good old Manscapes Lawnmower 5.0. Wait till you see me strutting around tonight all confident going out to my nice birthday dinner. I'll have the confidence of some springtime flowers. Daffodils blooming, birds a-chirping.
You'll have the confidence of a 48-year-old.
That's right. Embrace the season and have your dive buddies join the 10 million men worldwide you trust Manscaped with our special offer. Go over to manscaped.com, use the code TGDP for 20% off and free shipping. Yeah, Brando, my wife's taking me out for birthday. Here, take a look at this. We're getting ready for a birthday dinner here tonight, you know, while going out.
Yikes, man. I don't want to see this. Put that
Come
away.
On, look at this is the fifth generation trimmer. Look at these two interchangeable blades on this thing.
I've got one. I don't need to see yours and your
look up here, little off
privates.
The top up here, a little off the top. Look, I'm gonna go smooth. Look, let me pull this over
okay.
here. I'm going smooth down here.
Hey, if this is gonna be an X-rated podcast, I think we need to forewarn our listeners.
Hey, everybody, get 20% off and free shipping with the code TGDP over at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code TGDP at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants. Dive buddies.
Spring cleaning in your pants.
Brando, we got to get into it. It's part two. We've got a lot to do.
Well, I think we should take it nice and easy so we don't miss anything that is really good and pertinent. And I don't care if it takes 4 or 5 episodes. As a matter of fact, the more the better, I like.
Judging from the people, this is one of the most beloved books.
In the diving community? Sure.
In the diving community, yeah.
I believe it. It came out at a particular time when this kind of diving was in a very controversial stage in regard to, you know, deep mixed gas diving versus deep air diving in these two communities, and cave diving versus wreck diving, and tech diving was still in its toddler stage.
Diving versus recreational diving. There's a lot of battles going on in this book.
Well, there's not really a battle of tech versus wreck other than, like, it's two different types of diving. Technical would destroy recreational. And pure strength, pure technique.
In a celebrity death match,
exactly.
The technical would destroy recreation.
That is one that we need to see in one of those claymation celebrity death match. You remember those little videos?
Oh, yeah.
Who would be representing recreational?
Maybe Bernie Chowdhury.
No,
himself.
He's
John Chatterton.
No, all of those guys would be technical. I
Jack Excellent.
Who's
Brando Schwartz?
I'm not really. You hurt me right here.
No, you're representing. Oh. I thought you meant technical.
Oh, no, recreational. I'm trying to think of who would be a great representative for recreational. Technical's got us fucking.
The poster boy claymation of recreational diving.
This is a hard one.
I know it's going to be an insult to whoever, exactly. whatever name we say. All right, who do we want to piss off?
Anyway, we'll have to put our minds. Yeah, we'll to it. Hey, we'll take suggestions. Hey, listeners, if you know someone that you feel would be a great rep for the recreational claymation WWE Clash of Titans of recreational versus technical diving, send in a suggestion.
And who's your vote? Who is representing recreational diver and who is representing technical diver? And we should probably, I mean, this is there's three bills on the card tonight, Randall, because there's also who's representing Cave.
Yep.
And who's representing Rec.
Yep.
And who's representing Deep Air versus who's representing Mix. Like that. That's the, I think at the end of the day, that's kind of that's like the main event in this book is the Deep Air versus the Mix diving.
I think Brett Gilliam should, God rest his soul, but Brett Gilliam should represent Deep Air.
I would have to think so.
I think he'd be a good one. Anyway, all those little tidbits of humor aside, yeah, this was a very torrid time of turmoil in the diving community. It was a lot of fun to be in, though, wasn't it? I mean,
it certainly was.
Grab your popcorn and watch and listen.
And there was a lot of that going on, and I think a lot of that was because it was a time where, up until these days, everyone was just taking anything anybody said that had an instructor card at face value.
Yeah.
Regardless of the diving and the experience that they've had, and regardless of the near misses that everybody had along the way. You know, this was a time, like you had said last week, of, you know, we're getting bent, getting like.
Yeah, it was your purple heart.
Death, near death bends was like a purple heart, like a badge to put on to show off with a little bit.
Yeah, and this book in particular. As you go through it, as you read it and you listen to the accounts or you take in the accounts of these different divers and, you know, of course it's Bernie Chowdhury writing it, but he spoke with all of these divers. He knew a lot of these divers personally. As you take all the little comments that come in, a lot of it might be missed unless you were there and involved in it. But, you know, in regard to especially the Deep Air versus Helium, you know, like Richie Kohler saying how bad Deep Air was with regard to decompression. Like if you miss a deep stop, you're on helium, you're basically dead, you know. And this was the misconception. And he even said, like, it's all voodoo gas. We don't know anything about it. And this was in the 90s, which was completely and utterly false, especially knowing we've been using helium. The military especially had been using helium for probably almost a century by that time, or maybe less, maybe about 70 years, 60 years. But the long story short is helium was in use throughout the world in very deep diving, and they knew its safety and its efficacy of getting rid of narcosis, you know. And as far as decompressing goes, helium goes in and out much easier.
There has been in the diving community for a long time in cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
That an unwillingness to want to learn anything new once you've done something kind of cool in scuba. It's very easy to think you've got it all.
Well,
you know it all.
That you're right.
I've done it once. I came up alive. Yeah. Why do I need to learn something new?
That coupled with the bravado of I can handle it. I mean, you'll hear this so many times in this book. Chris Rouse, everybody's saying
it. And then every other chapter's got a, and then he died.
And then he died. Yeah.
And then he died.
I can handle it. I can go deeper. You know, it is like the college boys doing beer bongs. You know, put 6 beers in my bong. Put a 12-pack. I got a double beer bong. I can handle it. It was about the exact same mentality and bravado. And just when you're an older person looking back on it, you got a little wisdom under your belt, and you look at it and you just shake your head like, what the fuck?
Oh, I think every single person in this book
must do that, eh?
For the most part, would look back at this and go, "Yeah, I think revisiting the helium topic's probably not a bad idea."
Do you think that? I don't know. I've made mistakes, and I look back at my mistakes, and I'm easily quick to go, "God, I was fucked in the head. I was a dumbass." So I think there's a lot of that. Those kind of potential scenarios played out in the book where you look at it now going, what was going on there?
I mean, even though I'm sure there's some of the characters in this book that still dive relative deep air and teach deep air, I don't think anybody's doing it to the extent of in the excess of 230 feet.
Or even to the, I would hope they're not even in the 100, you know, anything past the recreational limit of 130, I would say, I would hope no one is approaching that without a splash of helium in there.
Oh, they're there. I know plenty that are they're still doing the 150.
Really?
And more.
Well, you see more people at the shop.
You can pay for it and take the class. But today, Brando, we're going to go more specifically into the Rouses.
The father-son dynamic, the relationship, the back and forth of the Bicker Brothers.
The Bicker Brothers, exactly. These two characters, you know, the book basically starts off with, I don't think you can read, you know, that the first chapter, Deadly Secrets, without going, for fuck's sake,
yeah.
Two, would you stop?
Well, it sets the stage. It kind of gives a, it is the hook of the book, right? The title's the hook. Of course, it's a great title and gives away the ending to a great degree. But the first chapter basically starts at the end, and it's kind of detailing what's going on as they wake up to go on this quote-unquote last dive, and the conditions. And then the relationship of the Rouses is kind of highlighted there, right? And you kind of get an idea. It's setting the stage of, like, man, these two, in my mind, these two shouldn't be on a team underwater together, given what I see on the surface, because there's a lot of baggage being carried psychologically between this father and son team. And let me preempt this. I'm not a licensed psychologist or psychiatrist, but I don't think you have to be to kind of see with this dynamic what's going on to at least some degree between the two. And I am a father, and I was a son. I am a son. So I do know a little bit about that. But anyway.
And I'm not a doctor, but
I play one.
A couple years ago, I was Dr. Love for Halloween. So I kind of know what I'm talking about.
I think it's...
I've been looking at a bunch of just book reviews, you know, over the Googles, and I found one that says, although the title removes all suspense from this overlong account, it injects a compensatory dosage of dramatic irony. On October 12th, 1992, Chris Rouse and his son Chrissy, both having experienced and survived hundreds of perilous dives in all sorts of underwater environments, died after surfacing too quickly following an aborted exploration of the wreckage of a German U-boat in the North Atlantic. Both died of decompression sickness. The Bens, whose precise causes, prevention, and treatment are still one of diving's great mysteries. Chowdhury begins aboard the charter boat that fatal day, showing us the contentious, almost adolescent relationship between the Rouses. they behaved like siblings strutting on the high school parking lot, observes Chowdhury, and earned in the elite diving fraternity the nickname the Bicker Brothers. The first chapter ends as the men descend for their last dive. Then Chowdhury returns to 1988 and follows the Rouses, including wife and mother Sue, who trained with her men, as they learn to dive, becoming both highly skilled and obsessed. Chowdhury, who sometimes dived with the Rouses and was charmed by their energy, their enthusiasm, and gregariousness, includes heavy chunks of his own history as well, sometimes losing track of the Rouses, featuring a near-fatal attack of the Bends that climaxes with an out-of-body experience, complete with requisite white light, tunnel, and decision to return to life. With the arrogance of the outdoorsman, Chowdhury believes that courting death in the deep, or on the slope of Everest, whose dangers he recalls, allows us to venture even deeper into ourselves. Throughout, indeed, there appears to be as much testosterone as water in the ocean as divers compete for underwater booty, diving records, and what Shakespeare called the bubble reputation.
Some underwater booty.
A sorrowful education in diving history and technique, in the psychology of an adventurer and the dominion of death.
The dominion of
death. I love that review. I thought that was a great review. That really captured the whole thing.
That's pretty good. Did you read the New York Times review of the book? Because it's excellent as well.
Lay it on the people.
Laura Miller's, her last paragraph kind of sums up a lot of it, which is, it goes as, fortunately, Chowdhury's vividness with grisly detail doesn't extend itself to character, or the conclusion of the last dive would be unbearable. Which I agree. I mean, when you're going through that last, when you're going through when they're dying, and it's a tearjerker. It's tough.
Oh,
it's a tough
one. It absolutely is. Which is, you know, through so much of the book, and I know I probably disagree with a lot of people out there. I apologize. I know people love this book. Love this book. But for a lot of it, like, I throw it down. And, like, I can't read another page because I'm getting so pissed off.
Yeah, I was like that when I first read it.
And, like, I can't I'm getting sick and tired of these two.
Yeah.
They're getting on my nerves. I don't want to read one more thing about them. And then The Last Dive is, you know, it's a 180 because all the love for a child comes through. And it is like you start welling up.
Yeah, because
trying to read through
it is exactly that. And that's where Bernie, I think, did a great job of rounding
that's
out.
That's
their,
exactly what I meant.
Yeah, their character development, because it was pretty one-sided as far as they were bickering. They both love their mom, Sue. I mean,
right.
Chris's wife, Sue, and Chrissy's mom. But that's very evident throughout the book. There's none of that going on with her, which is fantastic. But their dynamic, their relationship as Chrissy grew into his teenage years, which is quite normal, or I shouldn't say normal, it's just so overwhelmingly common of a kid rebelling, you know, a boy trying to hating on his father, you know. I know
right,
all about that.
Yeah, because there's those teenage years, that teenage angst where, you know, and then Chrissy, you know, was a well-accomplished diver that started doing a lot.
He was earning his,
Working in the dive shop and got some experience and got a little cocky, you know, like, I don't need you, Dad. I'm better than you, Dad. You're the one holding us back, Dad, to the point of, you know, being trapped inside the wreck,
right,
screaming for his dad's help.
Yeah.
And his dad refusing to leave his side.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly get the father-son love finally in that end, which is tough because it took that to be to what illustrated it, to what made it show. But throughout the book, it's just this bickering and fighting. And like I say, you don't need to be a psychologist to know what's going on there. But I just want to continue with Laura Miller's review. which goes on about Bernie saying his workmanlike prose gets the job done. And if the Rouses, despite his efforts to plumb their depths, don't emerge as fascinating, they're too single-minded about winning status in their tiny world. The pointless agony of their suffering and devotion they showed each other in extremis do. I think that says a lot about, right? They are that single-minded focus all the time to be the fastest, deepest, you know, most intense divers on the boat or in the community.
Exactly. It's like that, you know, review that I read where I loved how he says what Shakespeare called the bubble reputation, which is basically, you know, that point in life when, you know, pride,
yeah,
you know, grows ego so big, and your ego grows so big, and you're unable to, you know, let go of your reputation, and you just hold it inside, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and this you see in the diving world a lot. I mean, of course,
a ton, yeah, of the diving, like making big deals over pointless things just to inflate your own bubble.
Yeah, and I don't know about you. This is something I hope I don't have it too much. I'd like to think I keep it disciplined, but I see it in divers sometimes. And then when I'm teaching, I go into depth about, hey, don't let your ego fucking make you regret getting into a circumstance that's going to cost you your life. All because of ego, all because you had something to prove to everybody else so you can stand up and say, I did this and I did that. It's just not worth it. And then when you throw your son in the mix, holy moly, this is where I'm like, oh my God, it's cringy. It makes me cringe when I was reading the first chapter and listening to their conversation in the morning, you know? Yikes.
I think I can easily say over my 30 plus years of diving, I've had moments like this along the way. You get a little good, you get a little cocky, you get a little too big for your britches. And I think I've done a pretty good job of trying to curb it.
Keep it in check.
And keep it in check along the way, you know. But I know I've said or done things dumb along the way. I mean, what 49-year-old man has not had a moment or two in his life where he looked back and go, probably shouldn't have said that.
It's part of our makeup, I believe. It's in our DNA. I think it's also women don't think you're getting let off, because I've seen ladies with this same ego driven pride kind of thing going. But I would like to think that you and I and a lot of other people, we recognize it before we make that leap into doing something really stupid.
Right. Well, it's like that makes me think of that quote from Pulp Fiction, where Marcellus Wallace is talking to Bruce Willis night where he's getting in the fighting. You know, he's like, "That's pride fucking with you."
That's right.
Fuck pride. You hear that? Pride only hurts. Pride, it never helps.
You feel that? That's pride fucking with you.
October 12th, 1992, Brando, is where the book starts. On board the Seeker, heading out to dive this mystery wreck of the Yoo-Hoo.
Yoo-Hoo. It's a chocolatey, milky, delicious drink.
Not that Yoo-Hoo.
Oh, sorry.
Now, there's also in our celebrity death match of the last dive, we should have like a opening event on the card of the Seeker versus the Wahoo.
Oh, well.
Who plays the Seeker? Who plays the Wahoo? Because there's, you know, that was a bit of an ongoing battle up there
huge.
In the Northeast as well,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it was really big back then. And of course, Bernie, you know, Bernie doesn't really hold any punches back as far as calling Captain Nagel of the Wahoo a drunken,
right,
lush. I there's just not a... He doesn't paint him in a great light in respect to his problems with the old bottle.
No. And when you go through this book, you've got, you know, Captain Nagel. Then you've got Belinda of the Seeker. Right. I mean, when you go through this book, I mean, I tried to get a quick feel just like thumbing through it the other day. I mean, there's like nearly 100 different characters that you come across.
Yeah.
Going through this book, I mean, it's full of people, and it's a full of like a ton of big names in the last couple of decades of scuba along the way.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, you can go through it. That's what I think was one of the biggest attractions to me when I first read it. And there was a lot of hoopla in the diving community when it came out. So, you know, I got it immediately when it came out and went through it. But all of those big names were in it. So it was easy to have an image of really what's going on there. Bernie, of course, Bernie does a great job of describing it for the layperson. This is why, you know, he goes into depth about diving in particular and some of the technical aspects of diving and the physics involved in the physiology, so that the layperson can get an idea of really what are the risks, what's going on, what's really happening when somebody gets the bends, and what has to be done when to do a dive like they do on the Yoo-Hoo or, you know, any of these East Coast deep wreck dives, or even cave diving to a certain degree, because he does do some describing of cave diving and the training involved.
I tell you, in many ways, this book is a better textbook than a lot of the books that I have over on my bookshelf here that, you know, are, you know, specifically from an agency describing deep air diving, or describing intro to technical diving, or describing intro to cave diving, or, you know, it because it has such a interesting, thought-provoking firsthand account of being in these situations and talking about it. And sometimes you may think it's ad nauseum if you've already have all this training, but you look back and go, like, somebody that's new to diving that picks up this book and is reading through it, it's better than a lot of textbooks in describing what's happening.
I would go so far as to say not even new to diving, just somebody who's never had any, you know, inkling of diving, other than you go underwater and you breathe off of some tanks.
Oh, yeah,
you could
easily give this book to somebody who is the closest to water they've ever been was on the top deck of a cruise ship. That person could easily read this book from cover to cover and know everything that's going on along the way, because it is so well described, pretty much every little point. He doesn't just blow through assuming that you know something. Every little thing he explains.
Right, I'd agree 100%.
That's why it's nearly a 400-page book.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot, like you say, as a diver, you're listening to the description, you're like, yeah, yeah, yada, yada, come on, get through it. What's going on? We know what happens. We know about the physiology, the physics of diving deep.
By the time of this book, you know, Chowdhury had been diving almost a decade.
Yeah.
He was certified in 84, he tells us. He became a recreational scuba instructor in 88. The Rouses, you know, when you look at the, you know, through this book, you know, they'd only been diving like 3 years. Now, they did a ton of diving.
Yeah, in 3 years.
A ton of training.
Yeah, in the 3 years. Yeah. 600-plus dives.
800 dives, you know.
They both had a pretty good amount of dives for only being certified for 3 years, and a number of them in cave and deep East Coast wrecks. So that's significant. That's tough to do. That's, you're diving a lot, as far as it's not your main occupation, right?
No. They basically spent every dollar that they had,
right,
on diving.
Almost, yeah.
They spent every minute of their time on diving. Now, when you go through, you know, later in the book, you see, you know, that the Rouses, you know, got pregnant very young, had a hard time living in a trailer, to later, you know, being a very self-made man,
yeah.
Chris Rouse, self-made family, I should say, you know, owning his own excavating company and making very good money, owning
a plane.
Yeah,
he bought his own private aircraft, right?
Yeah, yeah.
His other passion.
And then the market crumbles, his business fades away, and they become nearly broke again.
Thanks, you know, Bill Clinton. Now, who was that? I have no idea. I don't remember.
But But, I mean, it's back and forth and back and forth. And all along the way, it never prevented them from diving.
Right.
And these guys were, like, every weekend, they were, when they first got certified, they were down at the quarry. And then when they realized, which you got to give them credit, you know, they realized they didn't want to just be quarry divers. They realized there was a stigma. There's another one.
Yeah. The quarry divers.
Quarry divers versus real divers. Like you can't be.
Let's not call them real divers.
Wreck divers. Quarry divers versus
ocean divers.
You know, boat
yeah,
divers.
Yeah, boat divers because, and ocean divers.
You know,
yeah.
The crew on the boat was giving Bernie, you know, a lot of a hard time at one point. Like, oh, these guys are just quarry divers. You're bringing them out on the boat?
Yeah.
You know, to the point where he had to defend them a lot of like, oh, these guys do a lot of diving. They'll do a lot of diving in the caves. They're cave divers. They've been out on the Northeast before.
Yeah, well, this is the shit. I can remember taking, you know, Strife from jackholes, I'd call them, who dive, you know. Of course, they're diving in the ocean, but they might be getting 50 dives a year in versus, yeah, I'm over at the quarry or I'm teaching at the quarry or whatever, or I'm just practicing. But that was because that was an ethic I taught and I preached, which was you practice. This is like any other activity. You don't get good at it doing it a few times a year, once every, you know, couple of weeks. You get good at it by fucking doing it and practicing and constantly honing your craft.
Absolutely. You know, and especially, and there's still a lot of people today, they go diving to do the dives, the big dives that they're paying for, and that's all they do.
Well, you see them coming in the shop, they want a refresher, and or they'll just come in and get their gear done. And there's a couple things right there. People will go out diving and then bring their gear in to get serviced, and then they won't dive for almost a year, and then they're like, why is my gear not working right? Well, it's been sitting in a closet for almost a year.
But I had it serviced right before I put it in there.
There is that dynamic too, which I think that's a good matchup. Yeah,
it absolutely is. Yeah, and there's another one. I mean, there's another interesting discussion too. Is the refresher?
Yeah.
Would it be better if there was no such thing as a refresher? You just had to stay so current that you didn't need a refresher in order to keep your certification? Because you look at it like nobody wants to practice. They just want to do the glory dives.
We'd lose too many.
So I'll do a night in the pool, and then I'm still not going to go practice. I'm just going to go right out and do that big dive that I paid money to go do.
No, we'd lose too many.
You're right. Yeah. We absolutely would.
It's a delicate balance.
Brando, they're going to do a dive on this Yoo-Hoo to 230 feet.
How many martinis is that?
On air.
Yeah, how many martinis is that, James?
Interesting you should ask that. That's the equivalent of 4.5, nearly 5 martinis.
Yeah, if we count a martini as every 50 feet.
Which is, if we go back to the kids out there,
that's old
back
school.
In the day, it used to be in the open water diver basic scuba diving manual, the martini effect or the martini law, which was that every 50 feet of depth is the effect on your brain of drinking another martini. Somewhere along the way, reflecting the effects of breathing deep air as relating it to alcohol consumption became politically incorrect.
Because if that was the case, you know, I think you and I are good to like 500 feet.
You got to build a tower. Bernie says in his book, and the effects of nitrogen narcosis, like those of alcohol, are at first usually extremely subtle, even imperceptible, but then mount exponentially with ever greater depth. By the time a diver reaches 130 feet, the effects may be so pronounced that he or she cannot function properly. Problem-solving ability is seriously compromised, and the diver may lose a sense of place and the ability to accurately assess the danger of an alien environment requiring a life support system Divers sometimes hallucinate and hear voices calling them to go deeper. They may completely forget that they have a very limited quantity of breathing gas in their scuba tanks and use up their gas capacity and drown. For our purposes, we will consider the Martini law to be that of every 50 feet of depth is the equivalent to one martini drunk on an empty stomach. Diving the Yoo-Hoo, a depth of 230 feet, while breathing compressed air as the Rouses would be doing, would be like functioning under the influence of 4.5 martinis. Now, I think we should give this a try.
I don't see anything wrong with that.
I think we should get some listeners, have a little night at the pub.
Oh, and, I thought you meant right now. At 7:30 in the morning.
It is my birthday. It is my birthday.
Your birthday. Anything's on the table.
We'll have we'll get one of our local instructor friends to act as bartender, and along the way she can give us a couple of scuba quizzes, scuba puzzles to do, as she keeps pouring us martinis.
I like that idea. Do we get to choose the type of martini we have? Or are we just going to have
I think we should mix it up. We'll start off with a...
I like an espresso traditional martini. Have you had that?
Yeah, well, maybe towards the end, maybe we'll start off with a traditional gin. Maybe switch up to a James Bond vodka.
Oh, I don't care. I'm talking like a cranberry or the...
We'll throw a little Cosmopolitan in there, maybe.
Oh, now you're talking.
End with a espresso martini.
And end with pure moonshine. Everclear.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah. What's your minimum surface interval dive to 50 feet after exiting a pressure group L?
3 minutes. Drink. I was gonna say we should have some of those tests involved that we used to give the students on the deep dive to 100 foot. I do a baseline up on the surface and on the surface without their gear on, and then do another one at 10 feet underwater, and then we would go down to 110 feet and perform some tests, cognitive type, silly things, and time.
Yeah, you put those, screw the bolt, into the nut. Yeah, put the round peg in the square hole.
Yes. So I think that'd be pretty good.
We'll do a couple of those tests.
Okay, well, let's do this. I like it. And are we going to videotape it so our listeners can tune in on YouTube or something to that effect?
Give me that. That doesn't even look like red anymore. You're still at the surface, James. Don't tell me where I'm at. Could be a fun
never experience. Ask a Navy man if he's had enough to drink. No, it's never ask a Navy man if he wants another drink. It's nobody's goddamn business how many drinks he's already had.
Now, the problem, Brando, was that the Rouses were going through some economic hard times. And for two divers who were not just certified for Trimix, but learned from Sheck Exley, they did their deep mix class with Exley. They studied and dove with Billy Deans of classic, fame of bringing mixed gas deep diving to the world, to the point where Billy Deans offered Chrissy a job to come work for him down there at his dive shop in Key West. So, I mean, they knew
in hindsight
how much smarter and safer and better Trimix would have been. Yet, because of the economic hardship they were in at the moment, they used the line of, we're kind of broke right now. We're just going to do it on air.
Yeah, and you should add in there, I mean, they were broke, but helium wasn't the horror that it is right now in regard to price. It was like $80 a T, which is 200 and change cubic feet of gas. So, it would have cost them a couple $100.
Right.
But
for all of their models.
Right.
Versus nowadays, you're paying a couple $100 for
Nearly $500. Yeah, it's silly.
in a time where you could get a, you know, a set of doubles filled with air for probably $10, you know, spending $100, you know, you know, it sounds like a big chunk of change. But when you look at the, when you step back and you read the last page of the last dive and you close the book, you go, well, you know, $100 is, would have made so much more sense. It's easy to look back and say that now.
That's again where that pride comes in, that ego. You have to, and I learned this and when I started tech diving too. Can you say no to the dive? That's probably the first thing you need to learn, is you've got to know and be able to say no to the dive. Like, nope, not going to do that. Whether it's too rough out, whether you don't have the correct gas to do the dive safely, there is nothing down there worth dying for. Nothing. And to believe it can't happen to me because I've been deeper on air is foolish. And again, this is, you know, hindsight talking, so I'm not trying to judge. But for the new divers listening, there's nothing worth dying down there for. Even a cool artifact off of an unknown, newly discovered submarine, Unterseeboot, if you will, which technically aren't all shipwrecks Unterseeboots.
All shipwrecks officially are, yes.
Yes, once they're down there, they're Unterseeboots. But yeah, nothing is worth dying for. Even the cool
art. Unterwater.
No, Unterseeboots. Unterwater is underwater. Unterseeboots is undersea boat.
Now, Brando, this wasn't their first dive on the Yoohoo. They'd already been out on it before, and there was already a fatality on the Yoohoo. A guy named Steve Feldman died.
Yeah, and they didn't find his body for a little bit, if I'm not correct. Actually, fishermen pulled it up in a fresh catch net going to the restaurants. Yikes. How'd you like that? I'll have the diver.
Tuna. Tuna tastes a little off today.
Yeah.
But to dive on a shipwreck, Brando, a virgin shipwreck, you know, that... that had been undived, you know, when they found this. I mean, it was, you had to be in an elite group of people in the know to even get an invite.
Yeah.
To get out, you know, by Chatterton, to even to get out to dive this wreck.
Right. Well, they made an agreement, too, that only that group would be invited from the beginning to the end, unless somebody dropped out, right? Only that group of people would be coming out to dive this wreck and get the credit.
Yeah, and now I've got a chance to be the one that discovers what this shipwreck really is. I mean, it's not just getting to dive a cool wreck. It's completely unknown. It's a huge, like, international mystery of what is this submarine, German submarine, doing over here right off the coast of New York. Chrissy already... you know, he's got these dreams of being like the next Sheck Exley.
No, he didn't want to be the next. He wanted to topple Sheck Exley off the top of the mountain, you know. It's not good enough to be as good as
Sheck. He wanted to blow him away. Yeah, you're right. You are right. And here they are right now. They've got the chance to live out the dream of every shipwreck diver in the world to dive like an unknown, undiscovered shipwreck, be the one of the first ones on it, and discover what it actually is, to loot and pillage and get all of its cool treasures, because that's a lot of what they did out there. Is, you know, I mean, that mentality of diver is way different than the
shipwreck fish
divers today. Or you know, like especially fish. Great Lakes shipwreck divers, where you go, you look, you see, you enjoy, you know. Take only pictures, leave only bubbles.
But yeah.
You know, that was not the East Coast records.
They've kind of destroyed that with the laws of we can't take any artifacts. Not even a nail. Do not take anything off of these wrecks or harsh penalties. But yeah, this is at part of the root of what's driving them to put ego, pride, fame over safety.
Well, yeah, you know? Yeah. because you get tunnel vision. I mean, especially you're down there.
Oh yeah,
it's right there. It's just past my reach. Like, why would I go all the way back up, do all that decompression, get about to come dive another day when it's right here? I'm just gonna stay another minute and solve this mystery. I will be the most famous diver in the world.
It is
Shaq, I'm Chrissy Goddamn Rouse.
It's like a virus. It's wild. I've experienced it. I know you have. I think anybody who gets into cave diving, wreck diving, this deep diving, it's diving, period. If you're in it with this passion to be underwater, it's exploring what you can't see. It's exploring the unknown. That's the call. That's the draw. And it's when you're in it, when you're actually like, oh, this is new. And you just look further and there's more. You know, the cave does that to me a lot. Like, right, oh, look over there. And thank God I have a very strong attachment to living, because that always beckons me back to, okay,
yeah,
let's
I was just
regroup,
thinking
take a look at
words.
Our
old Martin Farr, you know, named it the best when he said the darkness beckons.
It does. And that's the thing with these wrecks. You get inside them, you just want to keep looking and going further and further. And a thing like a Unterseeboot is so enticing because it's so unique and played such an important part in history. You just want to see it all.
Do you know how many Unterseeboots they actually dove?
In the world?
Nine!
You got me. I was like taking it seriously at a serious rate. Nine! There's no shortage of German humor here at the Great Dive Podcast.
Brandel, it's like being at the pub with your buddy.
Oh, yeah.
You
feel
like
good with a
like
couple.
You and me.
You'll feel great after 100.
Yeah, look at the ladies down there, Brandel. They're out of our league. We shouldn't even talk to them. Let's have another drink. you know, I think I got a chance. The one on the left, the brunette on the left, I think I got a chance with. I don't know. How about one more drink?
Liquid confidence, baby.
Five martinis later, old James, he's strutting down and going, hey, ladies. Right? But that's kind of like what this is, right? It's, you know, it's not just being on a shipwreck trying to discover it and be this great diver. It's being 230 feet on air, lost in narcosis and tunnel vision of, like, I am doing this right now. And you lose track of rational thought in many ways.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's with any narcotic effect on us, right? Rational thought goes out the window. And
I think that's a lot what, over. You know, Bernie keeps coming into with, you know, the Martini law and the decision making and being where they were, you know, 4.5 martinis in at this depth.
Yeah.
He says, aboard the Seeker, at the sound of Chatterton's voice, Chris Rouse sprang out of his bunk, glad to get out of the bucking bed. He went over to his son and prodded him insistently several times with his hand.
Come on, get up, you lazy bum. We got a dive to do.
Chrissy let out an exasperated groan. Aw, I can't get out of bed now. Unperturbed by his son's intransigence, Chris spotted Barb Lander, the only woman on board, still lying in her bunk.
Hey, Barb. I've been waiting almost 8 hours to pick on you. You awake yet? The sink's full of dirty dishes. I can see you've been neglecting your woman's work.
Barb, a nurse by profession, was an experienced wreck diver, familiar with the very macho male wreck diving scene. She rolled over and gave a grinning Chris the finger. Chris laughed.
Hey, Bob, you got to do something about your hair, because you got a serious case of the uglies this morning. Chris kind of sounds like an asshole, you know?
he was that guy. Like, yeah. And again, like we said this last week, you know, every character like does kind of represent an
archetype.
An archetype yeah. of diver, you know? And I've known, I mean, I look back at all the old Tobermory trips we used to do where everybody's like with everybody and hanging out the whole entire time, you know, year after year after year. I look at some of the liveaboard boats mm-hmm. I've been on over the years and these personalities pop up and you see these divers, these people over and over and over. And he definitely is representative of just that. He's, you know, quote unquote, that guy. He's never going to say something nice, especially about Chrissy. Right? The way he says something nice is he's going to say, "You fuckhead pussy." You know, that's like his sign of being cordial and nice to his kid, you know? As Chatterton's cool warning reverberated aboard the Seeker that October morning, most of the divers had already decided conditions were bad enough already. They wouldn't risk diving at all. Chatterton's words only confirmed their decision. Yesterday, the wind had been less, the waves only 3 feet high, but even the current had been forceful, making divers work hard to propel their 150 pounds of diving gear through the water and then back up the Seeker's ladder at the stern of the boat after the dive. This morning, looking at the roiling surface, Chris Rouse felt in his muscles the effects of yesterday's effort. But he was a strong man, and he scoffed at diving friends who trained for the sport and suggested he do the same.
An exercise program? Yeah, right. Try doing my job for one day and going diving the next. That's plenty enough exercise program for me.
His excavating business in eastern Pennsylvania demanded frequent manual labor from him. Whereas heavy machinery couldn't do the job, Chris would dig with a pickaxe and shovel. Besides, he figured, it wasn't really the diving that was strenuous. The equipment weighed nothing at all underwater. Moving within the ocean was as close as you could come to weightlessness on Earth. No, the hard part of the sport was carrying the equipment to and from the boat and the truck. That and climbing out of the water in full regalia. In rough seas like today, a diver had to make sure he had enough energy left to make it back up the ladder that was tossing like a rodeo bull. Chris knew he could do it. On deck, the wind whipping around them, Chris looked over at his son, who was frowning at the sea. "Dad, I'm not going to dive today."
"What? You pussy. I'm gonna dive. What's the matter with you?"
Chrissy swallowed. "I don't think it's a good idea. Let's just forget it."
"What? So a big, strong kid like you is afraid?"
"I'm not afraid. I'm just smarter than you."
"Ha! That's a good one. My load is smarter than me. I taught you everything you know. I carry you through the dives."
"You couldn't even keep up with me if I didn't swim real slow."
"Yeah, right. That's why I was smart enough to learn how to fix scooters. Which you don't seem to mind using. Hey, smart one, when are you ever going to learn how to fix those things anyway?"
That remark hit Chrissy hard. He knew he lacked the natural mechanical abilities of his father. "I'd rather let you play with the toys while I go play with the girls. I don't need to marry the first one that comes along."
Ouch.
Chris had gotten married while he was still a senior in high school, and his girlfriend Sue had gotten pregnant with Chrissy. He glared at his son.
"If you hadn't gotten my good looks, you wouldn't have shit, and the girls wouldn't come near you."
Back and forth they went, hurling insults and digging at each other, while the other divers laughed occasionally at the exchange, which seemed to some of them like watching a modern version of Abbott and Costello. Chris gave a final murderous jab.
"Fine. Don't dive. You are always a loser. And out here, you're just another wannabe diver."
Chrissy looked at the waves and then back at his father's feet. He relented. "Okay, fine. Let's do it."
"Nah, you're right. I was only kidding."
This was too much for Chrissy. His father had baited him. He laced into his father. Oh, yeah, right. Call me a pussy and a wannabe diver because I don't want to dive. Then pussy out yourself when you talk me into going. You're a weenie. You're just pretending to be a diver. If you hadn't gotten lucky with mom, you'd be nowhere. You're a pussy and a chicken.
I know you are, but what am I?
And that's it. Bernie says, check. And checkmate. With Chrissy questioning his father's motivation, diving ability, and most important, his manhood, Chris Rouse could not back out of the dive. Questionable conditions or not, both men would have to dive if only to prove they could, that they were real divers. And this was the Bicker Brothers.
Oh, Randall. My Lord. I mean, this is the first chapter. This is painting the picture. This is setting the stage. And, I mean, just that dialogue right there makes you shake your head. And can you imagine being on the boat? It's rocking. And you've got a dive to do, a hardcore dive. And these two are just going at it back and forth. And then to know that they're a father and son and they're a team underwater, it's setting the stage for issues.
So now they're at a point where they're determined, fuck it, we're diving just out of pride because nobody wants to back out. Where basically nobody else on the boat is going because it's fucking nuts out.
Have you ever been there? Have you ever been to this, you know, that decision is always tough. You're going to go out or you're already out. Are you able to say, fuck it? You know, if you're already out, you're going to lose the money. You know, it's that, and that is part of it. Right.
Yeah. That's part of diving that you got to realize, you know, it's a tough call. You know, sometimes the fates are not on your side and you got to say no. A lot of times, you know, that should be on the captain. A lot of times it's on the divers. Sometimes you don't know till you get out there
right.
And, you know, and the captain's like, hey, we're going. We're going to give it a go. We don't know what it's going to be like out there. That's just, you know, the way nature is.
Right. And to all those captains who kind of collaborate with the divers and you make a mutual decision and they suck it up if it's questionable and the divers suck it up if you get out there and it's shitty and you have to turn back. I mean, that's the agreement that should already be unsaid, but there, you know.
I agree. If the divers agree, you know, hey, let's give it a go.
Right.
Yeah, you're paying for the trip. You know, if the captain right there goes, I ain't taking my boat out in this.
Yeah.
No way. Okay, so then you get your money back.
Right.
You know, you get out there on the dive, and you go, I'm not getting in the water. No way.
Yeah.
You know, no, it's not, there's no shame in the game, right? I mean, it should be, that should be seen as a good decision. These conditions are
a shitty,
death trap.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. But now, you get dad calling you a pussy.
You're a loser.
You're a loser. You can't dive your way out of a paper bag.
I'm thinking even if it wasn't my father or father-son team dynamic there, that kind of like back and forth and you're calling someone a pussy or a loser for not doing the dive in rough conditions and opting out, that is something like I would say in my classes, like this is an example of what not to do, you know, that pressure.
Brandon, one of the most, you know, haunting things that you know, foreshadowing, you know, the end of this book is when Chris says to Barb, like his last words were, I hope I don't regret this dive.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, have you ever had that little voice in you telling you not to do it and then not to do almost anything, right? Just, hey, maybe I shouldn't be doing this. What goes through my head is there are just so many stories and books that, you know, movies, book stories of people that have that little voice telling them, don't do X, Y, and Z, you know, don't do this. It's not worth it, blah, blah, blah. And they end up doing it and that becomes their demise, right? And so when I get that voice, I'm a 99%er of listening to it.
Yeah, and he had help. Because Barb said to him, Chris, don't do it. Don't do the dive. But he knew Chrissy, because he pissed him off so bad, was going. He's like, I can't let him go alone. I have to go with him.
He talked his himself and his son into doing this dive now. I mean, just think of that. He talked both himself and his son, all because he didn't want to appear weak, soft, pussyish, whatever you want to call it, to his son, I guess, or to the other divers, or to his own ego.
Right, and then you got this little dynamic between Barb and Chris, and
yeah.
You know, just a little while ago, he's
you know, yeah, ribbing her,
giving
yeah.
giving rousing, giving her shit, where she's flipping him off, and because he's acting like an asshole, but deep down she knows he's a good-hearted guy.
Yeah.
He's just kind of one of those dickhead guys. He's just a kind of a prick, but he's
decent.
He's all right. You just gotta get to know him and just tell him to fuck off and he'll go away, kind of a thing. But she's realizing that he is kind of a friend, too.
Right, right.
So here in the book, Bernie is having a conversation with him before they left, because Bernie wasn't on this dive with them. Because he, as we're going to get into as we go through a little bit more of these episodes, Bernie nearly killed himself on the Northern Pacific.
Right.
With a near-fatal
Benz
yeah. hit. But he was having the conversation with Chris, like, what are you diving? He's like, we're gonna dive air, can't really afford mix right now, but he's like, we can handle it, Bernie, we can handle it. You know, Chrissy and I have done dives deeper than that on air before. And you know, Bernie was the one that was trying to talk him into waiting a little bit, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's had hindsight, and of course Bernie had a little wisdom, obviously, right?
Yeah, a hard-earned wisdom mm-hmm. of almost a mirrored...
To a great degree.
Catastrophic yeah. event in many ways, like being on a wreck, getting lost, losing bottles, mm-hmm. aborting decompression. I mean, it's very foreshadowing how he tells the story, you know, throughout the rest
right.
of the book.
And I think the thing I got from Bernie's account of when he got bent, and we'll go over that, I'm sure we're going to go into that, but the thing was, Bernie in his mind thought, oh, I'll skip deco. I'll have to be medevac to a chamber, but everything will be all right. That went through his mind, and that wasn't really the case, was it?
well, dude, when you're skipping 2 hours plus of decompression. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing when you your dive computer goes beep 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 and you go into the red zone
yeah.
and you blow off a yeah. minute of decompression and you got to go to the chamber.
Now, another thing, what
this
it says
is way
a little skull and crossbones
way
come
beyond
up.
that, right? Yeah. Way beyond that.
Yes,
I mean his you know, Bernie talks about his deco obligation being so big that the computer only shows 99
right.
minutes, because that's the highest number. So he's just got to wait and wait and wait and wait until it's finally less than 98, you know, 98
right.
minutes. Now I kind of have an idea of how much I have left to
it
do.
It only had a 2-digit readout for deco.
But he had told him, like, hey, man, why don't you guys, you know, get a little bit more practice on a couple of U-boats, you know,
right.
in shallower water, and wait till you can save up enough money to do this dive with helium, doing it on Trimix. And Chris was like, nah, don't worry about it, man.
We've been deeper.
We'll be all right. We'll be all right. We can
do this.
We've
been deeper. And that, I mean, how many times I've been deeper on air? I've been deeper on air. I mean, it's that little U853, you know, Bernie talking to Chris was kind of foreshadowing almost a repeat, but Bernie wasn't there. But almost a repeat heading down to the Yoo-Hoo that day.
Right. And a lot of it, I'm sure, was the pressure of, you know, if we don't go on this one.
Yeah, we're going to look like.
We might not get an invite on the next one.
Yeah.
We're going to lose our spot.
We're going to look like.
And we're going to look like pussies.
Yeah. They'd rather look like, you know, Bicker Brothers than pussies. I'd be like, I'm the opposite, I think. You can call me
right,
pussy.
Right. Well, and there you go. Like, so there they are at the back of the boat. As Barb Lander helped Chris finish gearing up, he looked at her and he said,
I hope I don't regret making this dive.
Don't dive, Chris. Bag it.
Junior's diving. I've got to go with him.
Let Junior dive alone.
No, I've got to go with him.
Bernie says, no, I've got to go with him, came the surprisingly somber reply.
Yep.
which would basically be, you know, his last real words other than screaming for bloody, you know, murder, you know, after this dive, which we're going to get into later.
I just read this, you know, even like the first time reading it, it's like, first of all, Chrissy didn't want to go. You pressured him into it, and then you want to back out, and now Chrissy's like, no, we're going.
Well, here you go. I mean, how many times have you seen this guy on a dive?
Yeah.
The one who's like, I'm afraid for my life.
But.
So I'm gonna scare you to death so that you call the dive so that I don't have to call.
Exactly.
It. I think there's a lot of that going on here. Like, I think Chris was trying to, like, rub his kid, make his kid look like the wimp, mm-hmm. so that he didn't have to be the one that called the dive. And then when his kid, when it backfired on him, he started having regrets.
Yeah.
But he's got too much pride to back out.
Yeah, it's...
That, and he felt obligated now because Chrissy's going.
You talked him into it. Of course he's going. You know, as a father, your words have like huge weight.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you just used pussy and loser.
Yeah. And like,
to
look,
a man.
Like, to his dad, like when you go, you can't do this. What?
Exactly.
I can't do this?
Yeah. Even a 50, you know, a father of 70 talking to a man of 50, his son is a man of 50. You could say those words and he'd still have the same, it'd still be that same effect as if he were 15 or 16. Like,
oh, no kidding. Like,
oh, you did
yeah,
not just
as soon
that.
As you go, ah, this ain't for you. You can't handle this. Okay, sure. As soon as you go inside, you know exactly what I'm doing.
Exactly.
That was me growing up for
That's
sure.
Most,
yeah, yeah.
Most of us are that way to a certain degree. Hopefully, you know, we're evolving a little bit as a.
Well, I hope as a grown man now, yeah. I hope that I'm a little.
I don't
smarter,
know though.
A little better than that. That I don't. I think
Dad's
it's
weight.
A curse of it's a bit of a curse of being a man that you. I think you're always going to slightly be prone to that.
Yeah.
You know, it takes a good, strong
individual
psyche
period.
And deep-rooted subconscious to be able to have that strength, mental strength of knowing when to say no, that the whole live to dive another day thing.
Well, that comes back to, I mean, we can get real deep here. It comes back to know thyself.
And I think we should get deep because I think Bernie gets very deep at the end of the day of this book. I think that's what it is. It's a very deep psychological look at how two people react with each other.
And the pressure and the – I mean, there's so much going on, right? There's that father-son dynamic, which I think is the big major cornerstone of this, the problem, if you ask me. That dynamic is what really pressured both of them into doing a dive that they probably should have just walked. I shouldn't say probably. Hindsight's 20/20. They should have just walked away from, right?
Yes, but they had too much stuff piling
right.
up that really the decision was already made, right? Chrissy was going to be better than Sheck Exley. they spent like yeah. they cleared out the checking account just to get out on the boat and get out to the water.
Right.
All the driving, all the work to do it, the last 3 years of building up their pride to get ready for the dive.
Yeah, and when John Chatterton
poking fun at everybody on the boat, yeah. not wanting to look like a pussy in front of John.
Right. Well, John Chatterton invited him, and that was like holy
yeah.
shit! I can't believe we're getting invited. We're moving up. We've you know arrived to a certain degree. Now we just gotta. Pull our own weight, and in their minds, pulling their own weight was they don't turn down a dive, no matter what the conditions, no matter how deep and on air, and et cetera, et cetera. So
right, even with the growing pile of bodies around them of people on these dives that we read through throughout the book that severely bent, died on deep air, another fatality here,
yeah.
another. Gruesome bends hit there, you know, it's all that right in front of them, but you know, fixated on that goal.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. All right. Well, hey, Brando, let's hold this one here, people. But we hope you're enjoying our little look at the last dive. We got more to come. Tune in next week because it only gets better, or should I say it only gets worse in many ways.
And if you don't tune in next week, you're a loser and a pussy.
That's right, everybody. Don't be a pussy. Tune in next week. Don't forget to email us. What are your suggestions for the celebrity death matches of Wreckers versus Cavers, Technical versus Recreational,
Quarry versus Ocean?
Ocean versus Quarry Divers. You got it. Let us know, everybody. This has been a fun couple of weeks, and it's only going to get better. So, Brando.
Until then.
We will talk to the people next week.
And until then, Jamesy. Don't you go change on us here at Great Dad Marcus.
The Great Dive Podcast is hosted by your buddies, James and Brando. Run!